Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detecttheSOS.com to learn more.
I don't know what happened, but it became Friday night once again. It seems to happen every week. But here we are, Friday night, bringing you Tech Vibe Radio. I can't wait. I'm a little bit tired tonight, Audrey. Big night last night.
You're always tired.
I am exhausted. Exhausted. After a 75-hour work week, it's time to spend another few hours.
75 hours 75 up to Thursday.
Up to Thursday, just at least. And, you know, now just save that little bit extra for the show on Friday night, especially after we had our CIO of the Year Awards last night.
Right. Now we're going to debrief a little bit.
Yeah.
Talk about the night, the winners.
It's more about the winners for me, I would say.
Is it?
Yeah. Because it's, you know, we go for months talking about all the finalists, and they're awesome finalists. Every year, I'm always impressed. We get
finalists.
I love
the video that we do.
Oh, yeah. The video that we do with Skinny Tie to kind of tell the stories of each of the finalists. But at the end of the day, we want to know who won. Just saying.
Yeah.
I know.
Do you want to talk about them?
We probably should. We should probably jump right into it because we got a big show in front of us tonight. Being that it's, you know, April the 20th, 420.
And we have CIO of the Year.
Absolutely.
In different categories here.
Many categories.
And so let's start with...
Which category do you want to start with?
Well, this is a nonprofit category.
Okay.
And the winner is Sharon DeRoghi.
Yeah.
Of the Children's Institute.
Yeah.
And if you don't know anything about the Children's Institute... Perhaps you should know that this is a facility, both inpatient and outpatient, that helps kids with severe disabilities.
Yes.
And their families. So I am sure that they are not fat with staff, and she is probably working pretty diligently to make sure that the employees and the teachers have the tools that they need.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that there's a lot of adaptive devices that are actually in the Children's Institute to help some of these kids with their expression or their capability to understand. So she's probably has to work across a lot of platforms.
She works an hour a week more than I work, I bet.
I bet you she does.
Exactly. Just
saying. I bet you she does. And then we have Ron Beckman.
Yeah. Which category?
Black Box Network.
Absolutely.
And the category, I think, is mid-sized companies. We've sort of talked about Terabyte, mm-hmm. Gigabyte, nonprofit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And...
Well, that's what I love, because the way we categorize these guys, and of course, you know, Ron being in the Gigabyte category, so he's big, but not super big like the Terabyte category, which we'll get to in a minute. But Ron Beckman, I mean, Blackbox is one of those foundational tech companies.
It
here
is.
In
it is pretty interesting. And if you're listening and you wonder who's Blackbox, Blackbox is probably the second oldest tech company in Pittsburgh. If you think of Compunetics,
exactly, yeah,
and then Blackbox
from the 70s, deep.
Yeah, it might be older.
Early,
it's hard to say. But, you know, they're actually not located in the city, but they are definitely an active participant in what's happening around the city. So they're called Black Box Network Services now.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron has been at the helm of information technology there for a few years and comes out of corporate America and has been around.
Absolutely.
So it's exciting because Black Box is really trying to transform themselves again.
They are.
We also have Eng Tan.
Yeah.
And he's Vice President of Information Technology of Automated Health Systems. And there were other finalists in this category. It was sort of an interesting category. We had Philip Savino, Chief Technology Officer of the Pittsburgh Parking Authority, which, if you don't know anything about that, that's an app that's pretty important that has helped all of us.
That's like my favorite app in the world.
Right?
Honestly,
I don't know how I existed before that.
I never get so happy to pay somebody easily.
It's the Pittsburgh Parking app.
Absolutely.
And also in that category is Scott Shifchins. He was Director of Information Technology at Burns & White.
Yep.
So get back to the winner on Eng Tang. Yeah. He's been in that role at Automated Health Systems for 12 years. And he has had a great track record. The people who evaluated the finalists thought that he brought a lot to the table and has just a great culture within information technology of their company.
Yeah. And what category is that? That was the Megabyte
category. And that's
the
Megabyte category.
So this is a slightly smaller company. Then we have the
CISO of the year in the Gigabyte category. That's the Chief Information Security Officer.
I like this guy, too. This is
Dr. Trevor Z. Evans.
Yes.
And he's Senior Vice President and CISO at Dollar Bank.
Yep.
And so that's got to be exciting in busy times.
Can you imagine the changes you're seeing every day with all the different cyber threats that hit banks?
Right. I mean, he's got a seat at the table.
Yeah.
I mean, for the issues that all of us read about and don't understand that it touches all of us.
Absolutely.
And we also have a finalist, and that's Mark Husnick of Arconic, formerly of Alcoa, and then they separated, and he's the Chief Information Officer of Arconic. He actually created he was the leader in the actual technology bifurcation to allow Arconic and Alcoa to separate.
Yeah, without him, that separation would not have happened.
Yeah, and actually, he's been at Alcoa and Arconic for 32 years total.
That's a career,
and he looks like a baby. So if you met him, he looks like a baby.
He doesn't look a day over 33.
He doesn't look a day over 33. It's true. No. He's been there since he was one.
Exactly. And he was the winner in the terabyte category, which is exciting. And also, he's our CIO Choice because of the work that he has done over those 30-plus years.
Oh, that's great. So the CIO Choice Award is actually nominated by other CIOs, Chief Information Officers.
Exactly.
And then they get together and identify who are the people that have contributed the most in their field for the year leading up to our event.
Exactly. And this is the first time, Audrey, in CIO of the Year history, I believe in the 15 or more years we've been doing that we've had someone who was also who was a winner within the regular categories who was also a CIO choice.
That's interesting.
So we thought that was kind of fun to have that happen for the first time this year. So congratulations to Mark Husnick from Arconic. I can't even say your name.
I know. I was having a hard time with that, too.
I'm like tripping over myself trying to say Arconic for crying out loud.
And then there's a Chief Information Security Officer of the Year in the Terabyte category.
Yeah.
And that award went to Dawn Capelli.
Yep.
And she's VP of Security and Chief Information Security Officer at Rockwell Automation.
Yes.
And
she
oversees strategy, governance, and security risk for the global enterprise. And she started her first security job at CERT, which was
part of Carnegie Mellon.
Carnegie Mellon.
Exactly.
And she started in August 2001, 1 month before September 11th.
Hey, isn't that crazy? Talk about weird timing.
And she was working with the Secret Service to protect national special security events from cyber attacks. So she's been at the forefront of
Absolutely.
This work from before any of us even thought about it.
Exactly.
I mean, I was in tech in 2001. I'd just moved to Pittsburgh.
Right.
But I remember us talking about, like, internal breaches, not anything like this.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it was an exciting night, an exciting crowd, and a lot of great people.
Exactly.
And I love the categories that are just all across the different sizes of organizations and companies. And they, too, are moving the needle forward for Pittsburgh.
That's what it's all about. And you can learn more about all of these winners and the finalists by going to pghtech.org. We've got a big old box there for CIO of the Year. Click on that, and you can learn all about these fantastic men and women that are really driving stuff forward. Audrey, our show tonight, We're actually talking to Sumo Logic tonight. They were a sponsor of CIO last night. We're talking to Ben
Newton.
Good
to see them.
Very excited. We're also talking to RoboMatter, talking about some STEM-related stuff when it comes to how to get kids interested in science and engineering, technology, and math, and all that kind of fun stuff. And we also have a special podcast that I got from InnovationWorks talking about the latest venture capital numbers in the region. Rich Lunick will detail that. I grabbed that interview a couple weeks ago, and we're going to bring it to you tonight. Anyhow, we're taking a quick break. We're coming right back. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Learn more about us at pghtech.org. Welcome back, everybody. So glad you're spending your Friday night with us. I got all my energy back, Audrey. You hear me?
I hear it.
I'm back up to full strength.
You were down for a while.
I told you that after that 75-hour work week, I just needed a little rest, and then I'm right back to where I was. And I'm really excited for our next guest. They were hanging out with us last night. Well, this gentleman was not. He was not. He's calling in, actually. So we have Ben Newton from Sumo Logic, and they're actually a big partner of ours to help that CIO of the Year Awards go off so smoothly as it did last night. So, Ben, thanks for calling in and taking your time with us tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Redwood City, California.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Good Lord. California, now we're talking.
The weather's nice.
It always is from what I hear. So anyhow, thanks for taking the time. Real quickly, give our listeners just the quick pitch about what Sumo Logic's about and what you do at Sumo Logic, and we'll start the conversation from there.
Sure. So Sumo Logic's been around for about 8 years now, and we are a what we call a cloud-native machine data analytics service. And so really what that means is that we help our customers that are managing their mission-critical apps. We help them manage the operations of those apps and make sure that they, you know, give the best service to their customers, manage security of those apps, that keeping the bad guys out and maintaining their compliance, and also, you know, figuring out how they can provide better service to their users by monitoring user activity and things like that.
So if people are listening, what kinds of problems might they have that they should be considering you, the company Sumo?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in particular on the on the operations side, you know, and the security side, what we see is that, you know, a lot of, you know, everybody's trying to move to the cloud now. It's kind of a foregone fact. And, you know, that's a very complicated transition for a lot of customers, whether you're a cloud native, cloud savvy, born in the cloud, whatever you want to say. That's a very complicated transition. So a lot of what we help customers with is, you know, kind of maintaining the customer experience that they want. Cause, you know, you only have one chance to make a good impression on your customers.
Absolutely.
And you only have one chance to protect their data, right? So, you know, really maintaining that level of, you know, operations and security as you move to the cloud, or as you build these mission-critical apps in the cloud, that's what we help customers with. So that can be, you know, from, you know, basically reducing the amount of downtime and the problems that your customers see to, you know, doing things like, you know, one of our customers, you know, reduce the amount of time that it took to solve customer issues when they call in. So, you know, going from like 2 hours to investigate it to a couple minutes. I mean, that makes a massive impact on your, you know, customer experience, which is going to be, you know, it's good for the bottom line and good for the company.
It is, right? And, you know, everyone, so when you say go into the cloud, there are still people who don't understand that.
So yeah, absolutely.
Talk about that. Like, why is everyone going to the cloud?
You know, it's a great question. You know, when I, you know, started out Sumo Logic 5 years ago, I don't think it was a foregone conclusion at all. And,
right.
And I think what I think we've passed that hump that there's a common understanding that the cost efficiency is number one. I mean, that's the most obvious thing, is that you're, you know, getting the stuff off the plate that you really don't want to manage as a business. So why, you know, if you're in a retail business or you're, you know, in manufacturing, whatever, why are you worried about managing servers, number one, right? So you get that off your plate. But I think what is also, you know, become pretty clear to, you know, pretty much anyone who is in a competitive market, is that if you want to keep up with the, you know, your competitors, if you want to be competitive in this market, you've got to be able to scale. You've got to be able to build the kind of, you know, experience that your customers expect. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you can really only do that in the cloud with these modern architectures, you know, at least to some degree, you know, adopting, you know, the fancy terms like microservices,
right,
you know, containers, there's all these different, you know, terminology out there. But what it gets down to is, can you scale and grow your business and grow your, you know, your exposure to your customers in a, you know, the way that's going to be cost effective for your business? And you really, the only place you can do that competitively is in the cloud now. So it's just a matter of, you know, at least all the, you know, companies that I talk to, it's just a matter of time. Everybody's got some sort of effort in place to do that.
It's going to happen.
Not in a competitive business.
And part of it is the distraction, right? And it still remains a distraction when you've got all that stuff internally.
Like I said, no one wants to manage their own servers. Exactly. So reminding our listeners, we're talking to Ben Newton of Sumo Logic. So I think the top concern for everybody as they're moving to the cloud is security at the end of the day, right? I mean, data, as you mentioned before, that is your secret sauce. That's what differentiates every company. And it's a matter of trust between them and their customers. And all of a sudden, you're like taking something that was once within your four walls, even though it probably was probably less secure at some point. But the idea that they're actually turning
it
over to another vendor.
It is funny that you say that.
Yeah.
And I bet Ben would jump in that people think it was more secure when they had it. Right?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you, what you think is like, I build it. You know, I actually used to do consulting for the military at one point and did a lot of government consulting. And I remember back in, you know, the early 2000s, you know, everybody wanted to see the blinking lights, right?
Right,
you know,
exactly.
I feel better with that light blinking every day.
Yeah, it's like, it's blinking, it looks pretty, it must be okay, right? And I think there's a sense of false security around that. And what it really comes down to is that, you know, even for the, some of the issues you might see is that, you know, these cloud providers in general have put in a massive amount of effort into securing their platforms. And I think there's a general recognition of that. But I think that is a difficult transition for your, you know, chief information security officers, your CISOs and people like that, where they're making that transition. At least from a lot of the people we talk to, you know, mentally, most of them have got past that point. They may have regulatory problems they have to deal with in their industries. You know, mm-hmm. financial as opposed to retail is going to be very different. But I think they've come to the conclusion that they have to make that transition because, you know, you're not safe if you run it in your own data center. And if you run, if you let somebody else run it, you're going to be, you know, assured that they have to maintain a certain set of standards. And so now, and I saw also the cloud platforms, it's the tools you use. You know, for example, with Sumo Logic, I mean, one of the first hires, I think she was in the first five hires was our chief information security officer, our first chief information security officer. And, you know, she built that DNA into our platform from the beginning. And if you're running a cloud service these days, you can't, nobody's around still that didn't do that in the beginning. You really have to do that. So that gives a level of, I think, assurance to the customers. But, mm-hmm. you know, then on the other side is if you're moving to the cloud, now you've got all these new technologies you're not familiar with. There's a lot of people touching the buttons, a lot of people with their hands
right.
in it. So how are you going to keep the visibility? So now I think that the big word is, you know, is visibility. Do you have visibility in
right.
all the stuff out there?
Right. You can
and then can
see
you
it.
Act on it quickly when you see something?
And the answer with Sumo Logic is yes, yes, and yes, I would have to assume, because that's what you guys
no,
do.
No,
that's
absolutely.
Better.
That's exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's all about, you know, the big, we've actually, you know, that kind of reminds me of a term we started using here now. You know, it used to be when I was starting out with Sumo Logic, it was all about, you know, it's all about big data, and everybody's talking about big data, and I think now it's actually really moved to fast data.
Right.
Because it's like, how quickly can you make decisions? It's great that you have all this data, you know, that's super cool, but, you know, if you can't do anything with it, if you can't act
right.
on it.
If you're mired down in it, then it doesn't mean anything at that point. So we got about
exactly. It's useless.
We got about a minute or so left, and I know Sumo Logic's building a pretty big presence here in Pittsburgh, and we're glad you're here kind of offering this. Just, you know, what are your thoughts on the future with Sumo Logic and how you guys are growing, especially in the Pittsburgh area?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think that's a big part of what you're seeing with Sumo Logic. We're building, the company's growing very, very fast. You know, we've literally, you know, doubled in just the about last year and a half, and we're going to be, you know, adding another 50%+ onto that, and really
wow.
a lot of that presence
that's
is
crazy.
Getting people on the ground.
Right.
You know, we want to get people in you know, both across the U.S., you know, in places like Pittsburgh, but, you know, and also across the world. And, you know, we're very focused on, you know, getting to know our customers' use cases and getting in there with them. And we want, you know, people that actually understand their businesses
for sure.
and can talk to that. Because really, at the end of the day, with Sumo, we get voted on every year. You know,
exactly.
we're a subscription business, and we can get voted out every year, right?
Exactly. So, pressure's on.
We have
man.
To make sure that, yeah, exactly.
Pressure's
we have to make sure that we can keep that kind of relationship. So,
exactly.
A lot of what we're focusing on at Sumo Logic is getting the people out there. You know, it's a core part of our culture, and then also, you know, building features within the product that are going to make it easier and easier
for
companies that are not necessarily, you know, cloud native to adopt the technology and also
right.
to, you know, have an easier transition. And then we're all about making it an easy transition to, you know, getting the best experience for your customers.
Absolutely. So we're just about out of time. If people want to learn more about Sumo Logic, where can they go and check you guys out?
Thanks.
Go to sumologic.com, and simple as that. So, hey, thank you so much, Ben, for stopping by and talking to us.
We're taking
a quick break. We're coming right back with more Tech Vibe Radio. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Learn more about us at pghtech.org. Follow us on Twitter at pghtech.
Hey, everybody. I am so glad you are dialed into Tech Vibe Radio. We like taking the show on the road to the offices, to the places, the spaces, everything in between in Pittsburgh, grabbing the stories when we can. And today, some great news has been announced. Interesting news, and also news that we need to be thinking about in terms of what we can do better in Pittsburgh, all when it comes to Pittsburgh's investment scene. Venture capital, angel, you name it. Big things are happening here in Pittsburgh. In Innovation Works and EY, Ernst & Young, every year they come together to announce the numbers that are driving Pittsburgh's tech sector and everything around it. And we've got Rich Lunak here from Innovation Works and Leon Hoffman from EY. Guys, thanks for hanging out with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so
great to be here.
I get so pumped up when you guys bring this study out because we see the action every day at the council. These companies are our members. We see them plugging away. We see them acquiring companies. We see them being acquired. We see these great things happening. And to actually see these numbers flow up into some real data and you show year over year, I get really, really excited. So, Rich, start real quickly. Just fill our listeners in about the background on the report. What is the report? Why do you guys do it? And then we're going to have Leon talk about some numbers. So
each year we try to look back at what's happened in the early stage tech community here right. From an investment standpoint. And as you mentioned, we compile data about venture investment, angel, strategic corporate, and really all classes of money coming in.
And that's important because most people, everyone says venture because it's like this kind of buzzword.
Right.
And venture's one slice, a big slice, a good
it
slice,
is.
But it's just one aspect. But you cover more than venture.
Yeah, so what sectors are attracting the capital? Where's the capital coming from? Mm-hmm. What are some example companies? We look at exits. We look at university licensing and spin-out data. Yep. We compile all of these things together, and I think it does a few things. One, it helps inform some of the regional strategies, but also when we look to then court investors from out of town or other investors to look at Pittsburgh deals, you have
right.
a lot better information
Absolutely.
To talk about Pittsburgh's strengths. So, and this report is extra special in that we've been doing it long enough to now be able to look back at a 10-year period.
So we've got 10 years of data. So
yes.
Give us a couple key stats on 10 years.
So, you know, it's really remarkable now to have a chance to look at it 10 years. But first off, the level of investment has risen quite a bit. It's up 198% over those 10 years.
Wait, back up. 198%.
Yeah, so it's almost three times what it was, you know, back 10 years ago.
That's
so we looked
phenomenal.
From 2008 through 2017, and then the number of deals, so individual investment rounds, is up, I think, 129%. So those two things showed great growth. But to me, probably the most surprising stat, Jonathan, was the amount of money that flows into this space. So we had over that 10-year period $3.5 billion worth of investment. We had nearly $10 billion of research in our research universities, nearly $8.7 billion in exit or liquidity events, all totaling around $22 billion. So it that was a I'm close.
That's
to
surprising.
Data.
You're like, wait a second. You went and said Ernst and Young, EY, Leon. Check these numbers again.
You did.
So tell us about the numbers in EY. So you guys actually go and you verify these numbers. You got your best people pouring over this stuff.
Yeah, I mean the numbers themselves come from third party sources, right? So
right.
you know we're not going in and auditing those sources, but needless to say, we're working with Rich and his great team at Innovation Works to pull that information together. And there's a lot of data in here, right? I mean, I think some of the really exciting stuff for us, I mean, you look at the headline and you look at 2017, almost $700 million of investment in Pittsburgh local tech companies. I mean, that's a big number. I like to look at it and compare it to the national average.
Right.
If you look at nationally, just the VC funding slice, like you mentioned, that's just a slice of it. That was up 17% last year, okay?
Huh.
Which is very nice growth
that's
in any industry, any market. market.
Very sizable.
You look at locally, we were up almost 45% year over year. So just from a trend standpoint, you can see that, you know, the growth trajectory is actually higher than, you know, than the national average, which I think is a testament to what we've got going here.
Yeah. So what would you say are some of the key factors driving this growth? I mean, that's some serious numbers. What's behind that?
To me, I think when you look at the areas where we have strength, things like AI, machine learning, robotics, even biotech, those are some of the hot sectors that everybody's talking about in almost every industry. And they've matured to the level where a lot of these technologies are coming into markets. You know, certainly we see things here locally like autonomous vehicles, but, you know, it's happening in manufacturing, warehousing, healthcare. You know, autonomous vehicles and automation and those types of technologies are impacting a lot of industries, and our region has strength in those areas. They're hot areas of investment, and so I think that's helping a lot.
What are your thoughts, Leon, with the diversity of these companies? I think that's a real strength for Pittsburgh, that we're not relying on just one industry to make this growth curve happen. So if some of these, as we know, industries go up and down and they're going to do that, we always have a counterbalance going on here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the diversity is huge. I mean, frankly, this is my first time being closely involved in this report. And I would tell you that's true. You know, that clearly stuck out to me as something I hadn't had a great appreciation before really getting into the numbers. And, you know, you look at, I mean, software and life sciences still are the bedrock, right? There's no question about that. But if you look at 2008 versus 2017 in terms of number of companies funded, foundation, although still the foundation, the percentage of funding has come down, which again shows that the other industries, the other sectors are starting to attract more investment, which is great.
Absolutely. So what are the areas where we need to improve? What came out of the report that says, hey, we're lacking in some certain areas? Because every region, we always have our struggles and we got to be real honest about them.
Yep.
That's why I love the fact that we track this. We can say, hey, no, actually we're struggling here. Let's apply some resources to this area. What do we need to apply resources to, Rich?
So two things to me stand out. First off, one of the things the report does is compares us to the 40 largest metro areas in the U.S.
So how do we rank out of 40?
So in general, we're ahead of like all the regions you would typically compare Pittsburgh to: St. Louis, Cincinnati,
Cleveland's
the world.
We beat Cleveland. Yes, okay, thank you.
Yeah, we beat them in football and we beat them in venture.
That's right.
We are still have quite a ways to go to hit that sort of top tier communities, not just Silicon Valley, but Boston, Austin, Seattle.
Bench anything because it's like ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
We're never going to be Silicon Valley. No, I don't want to be Silicon Valley.
So we are not where we aspire to. We're growing faster than national trends, and certainly, you know, a lot of Midwestern regions struggle to attract capital. In fact, three-quarters of all venture goes into three states, California, New York, and Massachusetts.
Exactly.
So we're bucking those trends. But that's one. The other one that I would say is, we are still, you know, we would benefit greatly if we had a phenomenal IPO or just meteoric success.
I was going to ask you about that because it's been a while since we've had that huge. We've had some nice acquisitions lately.
Yes.
Wombat, I know IW is very happy about Wombat being acquired.
That's terrific.
Money
company.
Back into the kitty there for IW to reinvest back into tech companies. Which
and Proofpoint's going to add maybe 100 jobs here this year. But, you know, when you think about what happened in Austin or Seattle has Amazon and Microsoft, right? And just massive. You know, some of the biggest public companies on the planet. And then in Austin, you had Dell Computer, which totally changed that ecosystem. So, you know, if we had a Duolingo or Four Moms or a company like
I've
that
IPO'd. I've got my money on Duolingo. I'm telling you, they could be the one.
They could be the one. And I think that would help have sort of a step function acceleration.
Right. So how does that happen? I know a lot of the issues we have are having that experienced management to scale that company to the point of taking it to that IPO.
Yep.
And we don't have that as much in Pittsburgh as we once did back in the 40s.
I agree. We have great technical talent, and we seem to do a great job at getting companies out of the gates and up to maybe $1 million or so in revenues or a few million. Once you get to that point, though, you need teams that can build sales, marketing,
right.
Operations, and we have some of that talent. But in some key areas, you've got to recruit from out of town. And I think where we tend to struggle is scaling the company to tens of millions in revenues,
exactly.
like Wombat candidly successfully did,
absolutely,
in a great way, and it showed with a terrific outcome. And I might also add, they did it on relatively small amount of financing.
That's a good point.
But I think those are areas that we need to work on.
Definitely. And so, Leon, what are your thoughts about Pittsburgh moving forward? I mean, obviously, you just started lining yourself up with these numbers. You said you opened your eyes. So, I mean, obviously, I think we're in a great town. I think Rich would probably back me on saying that. What are your thoughts about us moving forward?
I mean, I think we've got a lot of momentum, right? I mean,
I think,
you know, to the discussion around the, you know, a big IPO, that'd be fantastic, you know, but I think it's right now just capturing on the momentum, right? I mean, like, you know, we're not going to be the next Silicon Valley tomorrow or probably next year, but 3 to 5 years from now, we'd like to see us continuing to rise on this, you know, comparable city
Absolutely.
List. And I think as we continue to have successful exits, you know, that's just going to attract more attention to Pittsburgh from venture capital firms, other investors, and just kind of build out the ecosystem even bigger than it is.
So. I love it. That is so fantastic. So if people want to learn more about the report, where can they go? Because there's some great numbers. You can really like open it up and just start looking at all the comparisons, looking at the key numbers. Where can we go and check that out?
So you can download it on the InnovationWorks website,
okay.
www.innovationworks.org.
Absolutely.
And if you want to reach out to us, send us an email. We'll even send you a hard copy.
Ooh, those are fun. You can get paper cuts. Be careful.
You can.
I'm just saying. Please do. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. I love seeing Ernst & Young, EY, hanging out with InnovationWorks to provide this data. It really allows the region to look at this. Hey, we need to celebrate a little bit. But now let's keep working harder. Here's where we got to address some issues.
Agree.
We're moving forward. I'm glad you guys have the research. I encourage everyone to check that out. Go to innovationworks.org. Check it all out. I swear it's good stuff. It's all truth. All truth. All good
Thanks,
stuff.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Guys. Anyhow, this is Jonathan Kirsten with the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about us at pghtech.org. We love helping tech companies succeed. Doing it since 1983. That is 35 years. Oh, my.
Welcome back, everybody. I am so glad you're spending your Friday night with us. It's a wise investment. When you take a little time of your day, listen to Tech Vibe Radio, you get to know the coolest people in Pittsburgh's tech sector. Simple as that.
There's a lot of them.
There is. And we get to interview them every single week, Audrey.
I know. And that's why we're so smart.
Exactly. Because we hang around the smart people and it rubs off on us. I'm serious.
Absolutely.
I leave the studio 10 IQ points higher.
Minimum. Well, considering where you started.
So from 80 to 90 is a good jump, okay? I'm just saying.
So we have Jason McKenna of RoboMatter in the house.
The robots have taken over.
It's great to be here. And Not quite, but yeah.
They sent Jason over to talk about what's going on.
So we have some great stuff going on RoboMatter right now.
Yeah.
It's actually in Mexico 3 weeks ago. We just had some partners sign up with us there. Spreading STEM curriculum all throughout Mexico and Latin America.
Wow!
So this
is your first foray south of the border.
No, I was in Mexico and Brazil in December.
Okay,
that was our first engagement with them.
So you made a lot of friends.
I made a lot of friends. I was in Brasilia, Sao Paulo, and Rio in Brazil. So I got to fly around Brazil.
I love those areas.
Yeah,
very cool.
I've been there.
Mm-hmm. Rio's without a doubt, I tell people all the time, it's the most beautiful place I've ever been.
It's
crazy there.
It's
though.
Very similar to Pittsburgh in that you go through a tunnel because it's surrounded by mountains.
Mm-hmm. And
then you come out and there's the city, but then there's the ocean.
Huh.
Similar to Pittsburgh.
Very
our
similar.
Ocean.
I thought it was going to be the new way we all have fruit hats here as well, too. So I figured that was what was going to keep us.
It's a really amazing personality of a city,
it's
too.
It's very, very, very vibrant.
Totally.
Rio is. The comparison I give to Rio and Brazil in general to other places I've traveled, if you get an Uber in South Korea, or if you get an Uber in Taiwan, the driver won't say anything. They'll just drive you to where you're going.
It's my kind of Uber driver.
They're polite.
They're very polite. But first of all, Ubers are illegal technically in Rio,
right.
But you can get an Uber anyway.
Yeah, there's Uber everywhere.
And then when you get in the Uber, they will talk to you nonstop.
Wow.
English, Portuguese, whatever.
They will
talk to you. And every single ride that you're on, that's the way it goes. And that's to me, that's a great example of what Rio is like.
Right. Gotcha.
Very, very friendly, very right. vibrant. Lashki, what you doing?
Right.
Why are you here? What's going on? You know, and it's just very engaged.
Yeah.
It's a very engaged culture. It is.
So, Jason, give our listeners just a reset about the who, what, where, when, and why of RoboMatter. Then I want
sure.
to talk about some new things you guys have been up to.
Yeah, so at RoboMatter, we create STEM education solutions focused on computer science and robotics for students all over the world. As I was just mentioning, we have recently set up some partners in Mexico and Latin America and South America. And what we try to do is we try to bring technology into the hands of students to make the next generation of innovators and problem solvers,
right.
critical and creative thinkers.
You make me wish I was a kid again. I could learn this stuff because it's so much more fun to learn that way than
well, the, thing,
the way
the thing,
I did 45
and,
years
and,
ago.
And that's a great point because in order to make that happen, what we have to do, a big part of what we do is train the teachers. And that's actually why I was in Mexico a couple weeks ago.
Are you fluent in Spanish?
I'm not fluent in Spanish at all. But when you travel to these places, they're very accommodating for you, and they'll have translators for you.
So, awesome.
I'm very good at talking and pausing.
Yes, so talking and pausing. Very good.
I've developed that skill over the last.
And sign
years.
Language?
Not sign language so much, but you know, it's funny though. I taught for 20 years, and if you're talking with teachers, you can tell very easily if you're connecting with them or not.
Okay.
And what's resonating with them? What's where they might have questions? Right. Where they might have concerns? So. That language is kind of universal.
So you know when someone's eyes glaze over, right?
I can tell if people are nervous, if they're worried, what it is, where they have questions. So I think in any profession, that's probably true. And
definitely.
You have that universal language about it. So that's what we're trying to do at RoboMatter, both via our teacher training and our professional development and in the curriculum solutions that we make and the tools that go along with it. Really trying to prepare students for this 21st century knowledge-based economy. That's really what our mission is. And also the research that goes into it. So this is a very hot topic, as both of you know.
Definitely.
But what can we do to make sure that what we're doing is actually effective?
Yeah, well, exactly. Right.
Do you've
really important.
Collaborated on an article with Carnegie Mellon.
Yes. So we just had an article published just this week, actually. And what it was focused on was computational thinking. And really the idea of it came to me, I was at, so Remake Learning is doing a lot of great things in our region
right.
with technology,
we know those
computer
guys.
Science. And I was at one of their computer science gatherings and I was talking with a principal at a local school and she was talking about how sometimes she gets a little frustrated because her teachers haven't really wrapped their heads around computational thinking and what it is and how it should be taught and that and those mm-hmm. types of things. And what I said was, I really can't find them at fault for that because if you ask different academics, you're going to get different definitions of what computational thinking is.
Hmm.
And what I taught, so that kind of gave me the idea for this article that I wanted to collaborate with CMU on. And the idea behind it, it's this. If I teach third grade, I know at the end of third grade, my students have to have their multiplication facts mastered. If you have children, you probably had flashcards with
right.
them when they were that age. You knew
I remember.
At
Absolutely.
The end of third grade. You knew what sight words they had to know at the end of first grade. So those are milestones that students have to know
right.
in both literacy and math. And everyone knows them. Parents know them. Teachers right. know them. Everyone
Up
knows
until
them.
Fifth grade. Then we don't know them anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the difference. That's
then
a different
it falls favorite. Off the cliff.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But in computational thinking, none of that stuff exists.
Right.
What are those milestones? So what I talked about in the paper was, is there's different definitions of what computational thinking is, but what everyone agrees upon is that a big part of computational thinking is the creation of algorithms. And everyone also agrees upon what the basic building blocks of algorithms are. So what are those things? So we talk about how an algorithm, you have to be able to sequence, you have to put things in the correct order.
Right.
You have this idea of selection, which is if this happens, then I'll do that.
Right. Exactly.
And then looping, iteration in algorithms. Right. So those are the three basic fundamental building blocks of algorithms. And those kind of form the sight words, to use that in the same analogy, for computational thinking. So
I see.
I highlighted our curriculum at RoboMatter that we collaborate with CMU on and the code.org curriculum because both of them do a very good job of highlighting those parts of an algorithm, teaching those things to students, scaffolding that instruction so they can master them and then move on to the deeper parts of computational thinking that we want them to get to. So
that's for what grade levels?
So that can be taught, what our research tells us is that can be taught for students that are as young in first and second grade. So students can get taught sequencing. So,
and how powerful is that to get that at that level?
Yeah.
And start being able to measure it? No.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great point. And that's actually, I get asked the question all the time because I don't have a background in engineering or robotics or computer science or any of those things. So how did I kind of get involved
right.
in
this? Say.
But that was my hook in that what I found when I started teaching technology and teaching programming and things like that is there was a very low barrier of entry. So students can come in right now and get success right now, learning things like sequencing.
You can start seeing immediate results.
Exactly. And it has a very high ceiling, so they won't get bored. And the students that are progressing at a very high pace can continue to do that.
Right,
there's
right.
not these natural impediments.
You can keep their attention and keep them progressing.
And that's actually, and when I talk about computational thinking, when I do travel, I make the analogy to the scientific method, because that's really what it is. Because I can teach the scientific method to second graders, but it's robust Jonas Salk can use it to cure polio, right? And that's really what computational thinking is. If you break it down at its core, it's simple enough to be taught to very young students, but then you put them on this path where they can do some amazing things with it, hopefully. That's our goal.
You should teach this to adults as well.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Yeah,
I mean
we could have it.
Definitely.
I'd like a refresher on this.
And yeah, and it's one of those things that the more, and that's also a great point, because what we talk about is this type of knowledge is for everyone, because it's learning about the world around you. So when we were all in high school, we took biology, not to become biologists, but to learn about the world around us.
So the methods and to learn it
exactly.
As well too.
So technology is ubiquitous. It's part of all of our lives. Like, how does the internet work? How can I play an online game with my buddy who's in a different state? All of these things. What we want to do is allow students to learn about the world around them, whether it's around data, whether it's around abstraction, all these big ideas in technology. We want them to understand the world around them, and that applies to anyone, not just students that want to grow up and be an engineer.
Exactly.
Or
that just
scientist.
Seems like how you be a successful human being.
How are you able to interact with the world around you?
Exactly.
That's 100% right. Yeah.
Super powerful stuff.
And the other part about that then is when I do travel, that's a very powerful incentive for countries, right? So if I go to Indonesia is primarily an oil-based economy. They don't want to be an oil-based economy. As we know, the price of oil fluctuates. Very difficult to base your economy on that. They want to be more of a knowledge-based economy. So they want all of their students to learn these skills, to learn these types of things, and then go out and apply them in whatever areas, whatever problems that they may have in their lives. So, it's really important.
So if people want to know more about that paper, do you have that on your website now?
We are going to run a blog post on that on the RoadMatter website here within the next day or so. They can also follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle?
At McKennaJ72. That's my Twitter handle, so feel free to please do that. And we'll have information there. And also the RoboMatter Twitter account, which is just at RoboMatter, and the RoboMatter website.
RoboMatter.com.
Yep.
Simple as that. That's fantastic.
What's
stuff.
Your last piece of advice?
Yeah. Parting words.
The last piece of advice is I could say is that the more that we can teach students not just about the consumption of technology, but the ability to create technology, both as students and as adults.
I love that. The idea of not just consume, but
create. It's not just about the consumption of technology, but the creation of new technology. When you travel as much as I do, you see these problems that are everywhere, like traffic. Traffic's a huge problem everywhere. Like, who's going to solve that problem? Someone's going to solve that problem. It's probably going to be with technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be great if you're from
Pittsburgh. Turn it into a video game and the problems will be solved. I love it. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. That's why I love having you stop back to update us on this great work.
RoboMatters.
Good stuff. Anyhow, I can't believe another show under our belt, Audrey. I don't know where the time goes, but to me, it's like the best hour on a Friday night is talking to guys like Jason. So, RoboMatter, check them out without a doubt. Hey, learn more about the Pittsburgh Technology Council by going to pghtech.org. 35 years we've been helping technology companies succeed. We just love doing it. We can't stop. Go to Twitter at pghtech. And after you do all that, have yourself an awesome weekend. This is Jonathan Kirshning.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.